Good evening. Ever since I started this practice, it has been full of mistakes. Ever since I started, it's been 50 years of mistakes. Mistakes of body, mistakes of mind, mistakes of mouth. And when I began this practice, I expected I would make mistakes. And I was prepared to be confused. But I had an expectation at that time. I expected my confusion to disappear, and I expected my mistakes would disappear over time. And when they didn't, when they did not, I complained. I complained that my mistakes didn't stop. And I finally understood something pretty important, I think. That complaining itself is the biggest mistake. And also the source of more mistakes. Now, making mistakes in life is inevitable, especially when we start something new. And especially when we come to this quite unfamiliar practice, we make many mistakes. This practice that has come to us from another world, we make many mistakes. So, how to practice with our body and our mind according to Buddhism and according to Zen is very new to us. So, the elements of this practice are all very new to us, coming from another world like it does. So it's easy to be confused about concerning the way we should do things. And so we will make mistakes. We will make mistakes as we learn new skills, and especially as we learn new ways of seeing the world and of seeing our life, because through this practice we will start to see our life in different ways than we did before, and it can be confusing and we can make mistakes. So they are inevitable. It comes with being involved. But the biggest mistake that we can make is not about some skill that is not perfected or some knowledge that is incomplete or just simply making a mistake. The biggest mistake is continuing a stubborn mind. That's the biggest mistake. In Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, most of you, almost all of you who have read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and there is a chapter called The Marrow of Zen, and in it, Suzuki Roshi talks about the four kinds of horses. Most of you are familiar with this. And this metaphor of the four kinds of horses, it comes from a very old Buddhist text. Suzuki Roshi didn't create this story. He took it from an old Buddhist text. But in telling the legend, the story of the four horses, he dispels the notion that the best is ideal. The best is the ideal. He does away with that idea. And he dispels the notion that the best, the ideal, is something that we should strive for. So what he is saying is the point of our practice, the point of Zen practice, is not to emphasize the best. In that lecture, he talked about the value of the worst horse. And that, of course, is a very idea, a very unusual idea. According to our modern standpoint, that there is value in the worst. Usual way of thinking finds that to be a very unusual idea. And he said in this lecture, when you are determined with the great mind of Buddha, you will find the worst horse is the most valuable one. When you are determined to practice Zazen with the great mind of Buddha, you will find the worst horse is the most valuable one. Determined with the great mind of Buddha. When we practice that way, we see something valuable in the worst horse. What he means is, it is our attitude that determines the quality of practice. Not that we are best or worst, or judged in some way. It is the attitude of our practice. But usually when we say something is the worst basketball team or the worst football team or something like that, we don't mean that simply that they are below average or simply poor. When we say worst, we mean they're at the very bottom. In other words, they're always making mistakes. They are the worst. That's the usual meaning of worst. And so in our society, in daily life, in the life of our everyday world, the worst, something that's the worst, is judged as bad or troublesome. Most people, as they go about their daily lives, they worry about making a mistake. And they worry about others knowing when they make a mistake. That's a big problem. That's a constant fear people have. I mustn't make a mistake. It brings great stress. But in that chapter of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Suzuki Roshi said, those who find great difficulties in practicing Zen will find more meaning in it. To find more meaning has a prerequisite, a determined attitude. Again, again, he spoke, when he gave that lecture, he said, when we reflect on what we are doing in life, we are ashamed. When we reflect, when we look carefully at what we're doing with our life, we are ashamed. And he means that when we recognize that we made a mistake, we feel some remorse. And we should silently apologize to ourselves and to others. But we should do it in a creative way. In other words, when we make a mistake, we reflect on what happened and we say to ourselves, I see what happened, and in the future I will watch out. This should be our attitude. Remorse, but not guilt. Admitting the mistake, but not getting carried away. Just the attitude that says, I'll watch out next time. And he means that when we are practicing, when we have a zazen mind, we have a mind of practice. When we have zazen mind, we have a mind of practice. Now the founder of the Soto school, Dogen, said, very famously said, it's just one continuous mistake. Referring to life. Referring to a monk's life. What he meant was, a monk's life is said to be one continuous mistake. At the same time, it's also one continuous effort. So a life of mistakes is the Zen life. And with a mind of Zazen, it is a life of learning. When there are times in our life when we don't feel so good, we may be discouraged, disappointed, and when we recognize and we appreciate this feeling, when we recognize this feeling and appreciate it, it means the feeling is putting us on notice that we are making a mistake. When we feel discouraged, it means something not right. I'm making a mistake. And this mistake is that there is ego in our practice. We are wanting something and we're not getting it, so we are discouraged. And we don't feel so good. This is why disappointment arises. We are not getting what we expect. We're not getting what we want. When we feel disappointed, it is a form of complaining. And Suzuki Roshi said, if you pay attention to these feelings and admit there is some kind of mistake, you will not need some teacher to tell you, you're making a mistake. You're teaching yourself. Now, this attitude towards discouragement is quite unusual. The usual attitude is we're not aware of our discouragement, or we don't even consider it. most often we deny that we even made a mistake, and we just simply feel discouraged and wonder why. So when we have the unusual attitude towards discouragement, the attitude that says, oh, there's a mistake, then our discouragement and its relationship to mistake means that the mistake turns into understanding, and the worst horse is the best horse. The worst horse who is judged that way because of so many mistakes by accepting the mistakes and learning from them, the worst horse becomes the best horse. And when we practice this way, we continually learn how we are making mistakes constantly. And we are learning about our tendencies and our habits, and we learn how not to let them get in the way. And we just continue our practice. And in this way, we practice letting go of discouragement. Again, in Zen mind, beginner's mind, Suzuki Roshi refers to a very famous story that includes the monk Basso. And he says to his student, if your cart does not go, which do you hit, the horse or the cart? And what he really means is, if you have a difficult problem, which do you hit, the problem or yourself? It's a mistake to hit the problem, to try to hit the problem by saying, stupid problem, you made me feel bad. You are not my problem. Go away. Hitting the problem is the wrong answer. What he's saying is we need to look at ourself and see our mistake and accept it. When we make a mistake because we are unfamiliar with something, this should not be a problem for us. We just simply go ahead with determination. Just go ahead until we learn the skill that we need to take care of the situation. And the situation becomes familiar, goes from unfamiliar to familiar. Just through our determination, learning from mistakes and learning the skill needed. But when we don't have determination to honestly look at our mistakes, the mistakes will bother us. They will be in our mind and they will be very uncomfortable, and we will worry about what others think of us. And we worry if the discomfort will ever go away. This is the biggest mistake. Getting rid of the uncomfortable feeling about having made a mistake is not the problem. Worrying about being comfortable and worry about avoiding mistakes, this is the problem. So we all make mistakes when we start this practice. Over and over again. We don't know what we're doing and we make mistakes. And we may think of ourselves as poor students, even. We say, oh, I'm so confused, I just don't understand Buddhism. But we are unfamiliar with the Asian Buddhist cultures, and we don't understand the language of those cultures. We are beginners who know nothing. And in the beginning, we are very poor carriers of the Dharma and the practice. But if we let that kind of feeling bother us, we are putting ourselves down unnecessarily. So we make mistakes and we say, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm learning. And so we don't need to count our mistakes. I am learning. over thousands of years, Buddhism migrated from place to place, carried by poor carriers. So when Bodhidharma went from India to China, he didn't know anything about Chinese. He didn't know how to explain Buddhism in a very precise, careful way. I'm sure he made many mistakes. And every time Buddhism has migrated, every time it has been replanted in a new place, the beginners were the soil where it was planted. And they were like us these days. We have little knowledge of the practice and little understanding when we start. And maybe those people who brought the practice to another place maybe felt a little unworthy because they were entering an unfamiliar area and made many mistakes. But they were determined to go into some new place, some new culture, some new environment. They were determined, they were sincere, and they were heroic, leaving the comfort of their native land. So the lifeblood of this practice is its rebirth over and over in new places. Its rebirth by confused beginners like us. So we watch our mistakes, not allow them to discourage us. We just continue our effort to plant the practice wherever we are, right here. Does anyone have a question? Oh, Lee, excuse me.
Getting over, I mean, of course, I feel, and we probably all feel, that we relate so much to what you're talking about here. Thank you so much for prefacing this discussion by talking about the sense. sense of it's been all big one big mistake, but sometimes it's certainly how I have felt in the practice. But isn't getting over the sense of having made a mistake partly getting over your sense of what your ego is, of, you know, that you have some identity that, you know, has to be appear good to other people and to yourself. Isn't it getting over that that allows us to keep on going after we make mistakes?
Yes. getting over that allows us to learn from mistake. If we continue with a stubborn ego, we will deny our mistakes and we'll learn nothing from it. So it's this honest attitude. It's this honest attitude that makes worst horse the best horse. Yes, Richard.
So, when I'm sitting in zazen, sometimes I'm able to focus clearly on my breathing, be aware of it for extended time, and sometimes I feel very distracted and I get lost in my thoughts and my imagination carries me away. And then at some point I can come back to my breath. Sometimes I'll get carried away and then the bell will ring. So is one of those better than the other one? Is it better or worse to be distracted or not be distracted? Or does that matter at all?
It's very difficult, if not impossible, to sit in zazen for 30 minutes or 40 minutes and to have the mind completely free of distractions. That's pretty hard. It's impossible. Distraction is going to arise coming from a place that we don't know. And we shouldn't say, oh, that was a mistake. Distractions come, thoughts come. We don't say, that's a mistake. You don't need to do that. If we are trying to be really pure and ideal, then we get concerned that we get distracted and say, oh, that's a terrible mistake, which means we really don't understand what's going on. So if we get distracted, daydream, we recognize it, we come back. We come back because we know we want a clear mind. But if we say, this distraction is really fun, this daydream is really juicy, I think I'll stay with it. Oh, forget the clear mind. Forget it. That's the ego, and that's a mistake. So our practice is to say, I'm coming back. Then there's no mistake in distraction when we come back with that attitude. Thank you. Yes, please.
After 50 years, do you feel like you make fewer mistakes?
I don't think so. No. There's so many new situations always arising that we have more and more opportunities to make more and more mistakes. This is an interesting question you ask. And I think this is one of the ways that this practice will come into this world, this society, and this culture. In a monastery, the tradition of other places where Buddhism has grown and where Zen is practiced, the monks are in the monastery doing the same routine day after day after day, and it becomes very familiar. And if they make a mistake, they get terribly scolded. As if you should pay more attention. Terribly get scolded by someone else. The practice we have here, nobody scolds anybody. We trust that each of us is watching, we are watching ourselves very carefully. We will notice our own mistake. We'll acknowledge it to ourselves, and we don't need anybody outside of ourselves to say. This, I think, is the way we are changing the practice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
So I'm just wondering if it's important to share your mistakes with trusted individuals.
You asked if it's a good idea to share our mistakes with others. Is that what you asked?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes, not all the time. It depends on what we did or what we failed to do. Sometimes it creates harmony if we share some mistake we made with someone, and we trust the other person and tell our story. But sometimes we realize we've done something that's kind of harmful, made a mistake and it was harmful, and maybe it's best not to talk about it. And except maybe to a very special friend, a very special person. So I think it depends on the situation and how we see our mistake. Interesting question. Thank you. Yes, please.
You've talked a fair amount about best and worst courses. Should we focus on being better than other horses and competing with other horses, or should we just focus on becoming a better horse ourselves?
The second way is the best way, but the world we live in, it's as if we are required to compete with others to show that we are better or that we are best. And sometimes that's okay. But if we take that too seriously, we have the danger of not living an authentic life. Too much competition, too much concern about being considered better than others, too much concern for reputation and trying to outdo other people. This is a life slips away. If instead we are concerned only with we are doing our best, we find satisfaction in our life. When we compare it, when we compare our best to others' best, then we start to lose it. But we are under a lot of pressure these days to show that we are best. We are the best. So we have to be careful of being carried away by that. That's a pressure of our society, in especially where we are living. You go interview for a job and you know others are interviewing, and so you want to be seen as the best. It's part of our life. But let's not get carried away. Thank you.